Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back, CJ Evolution, episode 69. I am so excited, got my good friend Mitch Jackson back on the show tonight. He is a very successful attorney out of California, and Mitch, 30-year attorney, winner of some very prestigious awards in litigation. Mitch, how you doing, sir? I'm glad you're here.
Patrick, I'm glad to be here too. It's good to see you. It's good to chat with you. Absolutely love with what you're doing. And, you know, it's fun. We were chatting before we went live, and I just value our relationship. I value your opinion. I'm glad to be a guest on your podcast today.
Well, thank you, my friend. What has kept you going, your longevity, and you know, with being, you know, such a great litigator? What has kept you in the game, sir?
Secret formula, doing what you enjoy.
Exactly.
You know what? Honestly, I actually enjoy what I'm doing, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to practice law and really help other people. I like helping people get through their challenges, and being a trial lawyer allows me to do that. It allows me to make sure that people have their voice heard in a court of law. Levels the playing field when things go wrong, when things go sideways. We're here to help take on the bullies and protect the little guy. And it's just enjoyable. I just like doing what I'm doing, and I'm having more fun today, Patrick, than I had when I first started practicing law back in 1986.
That is amazing, because it is so important. You know, I talk about on the podcast, I'm sure you do, Mitch, about you just got to have passion in what you're doing. And it obviously you have passion in what you're doing.
It gets you out of bed in the morning. I don't think passion leads to success, but it definitely gets you up and out the door. And with that level of enthusiasm, you execute, you work your butt off. And I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to come on your podcast, Patrick, is because I like the fact that you focus on self-improvement, entrepreneurship, business ideas, life skills. I think regardless of what we're doing, whether you're a police officer, whether you're flipping burgers for a living, whether you're a trial lawyer, all of these things we can each improve upon each and every day. And I like the content that you're sharing with your office, I mean, with your audience, and I'm glad to be here and hopefully add a small bit of content to what you've already developed, because it's good stuff.
Well, I appreciate it, sir, and you are always welcome. Let's talk about some important things here. Let's talk about negotiation. Let's talk about the importance of learning the art of negotiation. What are some tips at becoming better at this, sir? Because you are a litigator, and you have to negotiate almost every day. Am I right?
You are right, and I think we're all negotiating every single day, regardless of what we do for a living. I mean, I happen to negotiate on behalf of my clients, but when I get home on the weekends and we're talking about what movie are we going to see as a family, that negotiation takes place, which I have not yet won one of those negotiations. you know, with police officers and law enforcement, you know, pulling somebody over and discussing how is that stop going to go down. We're all negotiating, and it's really fascinated me over the years to you know, growing up on a guest ranch in Tucson and watching my mom and dad interact with the guest and negotiate different transactions with them. It really sparked an interest in me that has carried through to the practice of law. And I've just found and been fascinated by the art of negotiation. I've spent a lot of time studying it, a lot of time doing it, engaging in it, and walking my talk. And you know, the thing about negotiation is the more you negotiate, the more you discuss options with opposing counsel or even with clients, the better you get at it. And the more fun it gets. And so, yeah, I put together a lot of resources, a lot of talking points about negotiation. I've jotted down 7 or 8 today for the podcast. And I think one of the most important things that people need to realize when it comes down to negotiation is that the best negotiators I've ever come across are the negotiators who have exceptional people skills. Okay, they understand the importance of respecting where the other side's coming from, of appreciating what the other person's going through. They have good people skills where they listen more than they speak. They're very skilled at understanding the difference with putting people first. You can be kind to people, but difficult or hard on issues. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with doing that. You don't need to beat somebody up to make your point or to get your way. And those are the negotiators that I've studied, I've learned from, and how, you know, I've tried to model my negotiation skills after them over the years, and it's worked really, really well. So the first step, I think, with being an effective negotiator is to really focus on your people skills. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine wrote a book. His name is Bob Berg. He wrote a book called Adversaries into Allies. It's probably the best tool I've ever come across that teaches you how to develop and fine-tune your people skills. And I'd recommend that book to anybody that's interested in you know, improving their negotiation skills. So that's number one. And it's easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are often times where I understand I can walk into a mediation and really, because of the facts or the law, just beat up on the other side to get my way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the way to go about it, because you're not building rapport with the other side. You're not building long-term relationships. They're going to resent the final outcome, even if it favors my client. And if I can get to that same outcome in a way that's win-win for everyone involved, I think that's what separates the skilled negotiators from the rookies in the world.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing you said, Mitch, that really resonates with me is that, and I'm guilty of this too, is that we need to learn how to listen more instead of, you know, just jumping in and really listen to what the other side is saying. Correct? I mean, because
that's,
I know,
so
I find myself guilty because I'm a cop, Mitch. I mean, I'm a type A, you know, so I want to, you know, I kind of want to get my point across very, very quickly. And I know that's a weakness of mine, but like you say, you really have to listen to everything and you have to learn how to listen better.
It's so hard for lawyers to stop talking and start listening.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I've been able to get my point across to young trial lawyers who I mentor is I let them know that listening is a tool. And if you listen, you'll pick up clues. You'll get new facts. You'll learn where that person's really coming from. If you listen, and I mean actively listen with your eyes, your ears, paying attention to body language, you're going to get more ammunition, more information to help you in your negotiation process. And I know it's the same for you. When you guys are engaged in a stop or an investigation, you're not just listening to what somebody's saying. You're mm-hmm. observing the entire situation using all of your senses. And it's so key and critical to do that. You have to learn how to just be quiet and do that, right?
Yeah, exactly, Mitch. And how much is communicated through nonverbal, I mean, body language? You said it. I mean, how much do we communicate every day with just body language? It's a huge number, right? It's a huge percentage.
I think it's around 60 or 70%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that what people say by how they act, their body language, what their eyes are telling you, is just as important. It's probably more important than what they have to say. And along those same lines, though, I think when you're negotiating, you know, the second tip in addition to people skills is you need to understand that the other side of a negotiation, they're not concerned with how you feel or what you're going to get out of it. What they're focused on is how is this negotiation going to affect them?
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you realize that as a negotiator, you can structure your arguments, you can fine-tune your positions so that you're looking at what the other side is looking for as an outcome to the negotiation that benefits them. What are they looking for? Once you understand that it's not about you and it's about the other side, I think that really does help empower you to get the results that you're looking for your clients.
But it is so hard not to look at just yourself, right? I mean, because that's just human instinct, right? We want to, and that's selfish.
Sure.
in a way, and I understand that. But we want to do what's best for us. But it makes perfect sense. We have to look at the other side and what they want too.
But oftentimes, what we think the other side wants isn't really what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. If I'm involved in a case that involves a monetary settlement, my client may think the other side's concerned with the amount of money that's being paid out, when in fact what they're concerned with has to do with how they look in front of their shareholders during an end of year review, or how that claims manager looks to his or her supervisor when he or she gets back to the office. There's more involved oftentimes than what we might initially think. So if we listen to what the other side's telling us and we try to design our conversation around the concept of what is it that the other side wants out of this negotiation, oftentimes the other side just wants to be done with, in my case, with a file. And so if I can structure a situation where I've maximized my client's outcome, and that might be from a monetary standpoint, and I've minimized the, let's just say the impact that that claims adjuster may have with the big insurance company. In other words, that claims adjuster did everything he or she could do to minimize what they pay out. And I give them facts and I give them information in other cases across the country that maybe have settled for a lot more than what we're looking for today. They could go back to their managers and say, listen, I beat up on that Mitch Jackson. Even though we paid X amount of dollars, in New York, the same case went for twice as much. Now, obviously, Patrick, I'm never going to let that happen. And that case in New York was different than the case here in California, based upon the facts or the injuries. But you try to create a situation where you can get the other side's needs, wants, and desires are met. And that comes from listening, and that comes from communicating, and it comes from asking open-ended questions. That's really my next step, is learn how to ask open-ended questions and get the other side to start talking.
Now, Mitch, can you, and I know a lot of listeners probably know what open-end questions are, but there's open-ended, there's closed questions. What are the open-ended questions?
Well, so a closed question would be a question that can be answered yes or no. And you're never going to find out what the other person feels or thinks or is doing by asking yes or no questions. When I'm picking a jury, I ask open-ended questions. So an example might be in a case of negotiation, let's say maybe pulling someone over on the side of the road. Okay, if you're a police officer, for example. Can I use this example?
Yeah, go ahead.
So if you pull someone over on the side of the road, it's one thing to say, did you just exit the parking lot at the 7-Eleven? That answer is going to give you a yes or no answer, as opposed to, where are you going? That's an open-ended question. And then you can stop and listen to what the response is. When I'm picking a jury, and I might be talking to a jury, and let's say I'm talking to a jury about a defective iPhone type of situation. And so I want to make sure I've got jurors that are open-minded about the use of technology. Okay. And I might ask my jurors, instead of asking them, do any of you use an iPhone? It's a yes or no question, right? I might ask the question, what device do you enjoy using throughout the course of the day more so than anything else? And that opens it up to an answer of either an iPhone or a laptop or a tablet or a desktop. And then the next question is, why do you feel that way? Or why do you use that particular device? So it requires them to have a conversation with you. And that's how you get information. That's how you start building rapport. You'll probably find something in common.
Sure.
And if you can find something in common that you can expand upon, whether it's sports, the arts, politics, a good book, a good movie, you can just kind of parlay the conversation down that path, continually taking it back to the negotiation topic. But building rapport oftentimes allows you to get to that end game when it comes to negotiation. So that's really, really important.
Now, Mitch, can anybody learn to be a negotiator, or does it take a special kind of person?
I do think anyone can learn, assuming they're willing to learn. There are some people that are gifted negotiators, and it seems to me like they're just born that way, right? But truth be told, they've probably had a lot of experience and a lot of practice before they ended up on the other side of a conference table in a mediation that I'm engaged with. So I think it is something that you can learn. I know I've learned a lot of different tricks and tips and approaches as a negotiator, both from reading, from studying this, and then actually from doing it. You can learn, you have to roll up your sleeves, go to work and do this stuff and learn how to negotiate on the fly. And yes, I think it's something that you can learn how to do. Mm-hmm. But it takes time. And, you know, some people will pick it up quickly. Some people, it's going to take years and years and years. But I think there's, a finish line, assuming you've got the drive, the motivation, the intent, the desire, and, you know, just a little bit of intellect in order to pull all this together and make it happen.
Now, how can law enforcement, it's so interesting, you know, because it applies to law enforcement. I mean, because I really don't think of myself as a negotiator, but I am. And I think most law enforcement officers are. I mean, how can law enforcement, you know, first responders benefit from better negotiation skills?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because you're the expert on that, but uh-huh. I'm putting myself in your shoes. I think one of the techniques that I use, and it's really the next technique I was going to talk about, is I think it's always important during a negotiation to craft a statement that you can use over and over in a negotiation. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for example, if I'm negotiating on behalf of a buyer or a seller of a piece of real estate or a piece of property, maybe a house, for example, I might craft a statement before I walk into that negotiation and have it written down, or maybe it's in the back of my head and it says something like, my client's interested in buying the house and your clients are interested in selling the house. Mm-hmm. What can we do to get this deal done? And every time we reach an impasse, every time that there's a disagreement, somebody's feathers get ruffled, somebody storms out of the room for a few minutes, you can always come back to that statement. Listen, we're here today because your client has a house that he'd like to sell. My client likes the home and would like to purchase it. What can we do to get this deal done? And it kind of refocuses everybody back to the topic at hand. Along those same lines, if there's an officer that maybe pulls over a vehicle, standard stop, and the officer walks up, you know, and once again, I'm not sure what the protocol is and everything else, but I would suggest that during the conversation, if the officer says something like, listen, we're both here to find out what happened. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to go home tonight. I'd like to go back to my department tonight. Let's work together to get this done. Mm-hmm. I mean, some common phrase that sets the tone, that puts everybody at ease. Look, it's my job to make sure you've got valid insurance. I want you to go home tonight. I want to go back to the office. So let's just work together to get this done. And you can just keep coming back to that. I mean, that's like one very simplified example. The other point that might be applicable to a police officer would be to focus on something you both agree on. So if somebody's pulled over for speeding, for example, the officer during the conversation may say, listen, I think we both agree that it's not safe to speed in a school zone. Wouldn't you agree with me? And most operators of motor vehicles will say, whether they were doing it or not, they're going to say, you know, absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so you're kind of focusing in on something that you both agree on. And from that, you can deviate into your investigation. You can deviate into your conversation. If there's an impasse, if emotions start to run high, you can take a step back and say, listen, you know, we're both in agreement that it's just not safe to speed in a school crossing zone. So bear with me while I figure out exactly what happened. And it has a tendency to lower the temperature a little bit, get everybody refocused on what the issue is. So that might be two ways a police officer could use some of these techniques, whether it's at a traffic stop or really any other type of human-to-human interaction.
And that's great advice, Mitch. And I always tell, I mean, it's interesting, the older I get and the longer I do this job, you know, I teach and I tell students and I tell new officers that I help train, you know, I always ask, you know, what's your most important weapon? And instinctively, a lot of them, what do you think they point to? They point to their taser, they point to their firearm, and I always point to my mouth. And it's interesting. The older I get, the more I realize that communication skills, your head, you know, your brain, is going to either get you in trouble, or it's going to keep you out of trouble.
I love that. You know, that's so true.
I mean, now everything with negotiation, Mitch, starts with effective communicating. What tips can you give to some, you know, listeners out there, law enforcement, whoever's listening to the podcast? How can you become more effective at communicating?
Well, I think when it comes to communicating, you want to keep it simple, and you want to keep it real. You want to be truthful and honest, and I think people pick up on that. I think perception's everything when it comes to communicating, when it comes to negotiating. What the other person perceives is going on, their perception of how prepared you are, their perception of how intelligent you are, their perception of whether or not the law's on your side, their perception of whether or not, as a police officer, you are acting reasonably and you actually have the community's best interest in mind. I think the perception aspect of communicating is critically important. Another communication tip, which applies to what I do each and every day, is the communication approach of using stories, of sharing your case, sharing your position, sharing your negotiation effort in the form of a story. Because while facts tell, stories sell. And so everything we're talking about, when I go into a negotiation, I've usually got an underlying theme or story that I'm sharing with the other side. Okay, I'm not making a demand. I'm telling a story as to what happened, and entwined within that story will be our, you know, our demands, will be our desired outcome. Within that story, I'm hopefully taking the other side's position into consideration, because I want them to appreciate the story. I want them to repeat the story later on that evening to their spouse when they go home. And I want them to have an out. I want them to feel like it was a win-win resolution, even though whether they realize it or not, I took them to the house. You know, and to me, that's really, really, it's fun to do. And one way of doing that is, I learned a long time ago, Patrick, that when it comes to negotiation, you have to give the perception or impression to the other side that you care about what happens, but not that much.
Interesting.
And that's key. So my final play always is, I can take a case to court and to trial. And that's what we do. And even though it's critically important during a negotiation or a mediation that we get this case settled, maybe my client doesn't have the money to finance a case, maybe the law that the other side doesn't realize, maybe the law doesn't favor our position. I mean, it might be critically important for me to get this case done today, this afternoon, or I may not win the case. I have to give the other side the impression that we're willing to walk. I have to give the other side the impression that I do deeply care about my client and I deeply care about getting this case done. But you know what? I'm not going to lose any sleep over it if we don't. And that has been a really effective approach, is to develop that demeanor in any type of negotiation situation, and it will carry you a long ways towards getting the results that you're looking for.
Well, amazing, Mitch. Thank you for sharing your expert advice on negotiating and effective communicating. I want to shift gears a little bit, buddy, if we can.
Sure.
And talk about your social media presence. And I know you're a humble guy, and I respect that, but you're such a big presence, because there's the Mitch Jackson, you know, the successful attorney, and then there's the Mitch Jackson who is like a social media juggernaut. I mean, I hope I can use that word with you, because you are all over the place on social media. How did you become such a big presence on social media?
Well, I'm not sure that's the case, and it's, and
well,
it's all perception.
I think it's the case.
But you know, it's funny, because we slapped our first website up in 1996. So it's 20 years ago. 20 plus years ago is when we you know, took our first step onto the digital, into the digital sandbox, shall we say. And you know, I'll tell you, I've really put a lot of time over the years into building our digital footprint, where we started, you know, with the website, and then rolled over to what's now known as blogging. When social media rolled around 8-10 years ago with Twitter and Facebook, we jumped on those platforms. And I just found it as a very, very effective way for me to engage other people, add value to their lives, and really show them our human side. That was my little trick right there, because I got into practicing law because I like people, I like helping people, I've always been that way. And so what I realized with social media is it allowed me as a lawyer to engage with a global audience who otherwise wouldn't be sitting across my desk, mm-hmm. to show them that not all lawyers, in fact, very few lawyers are a-holes. We're guys and gals just like the people that live next to them on the street, and we have families and we care about our community. And I noticed almost immediately that social media allowed me to do that, to really show my human side. Mm-hmm. And today, Patrick, when lawyers try to, and I've got a mastermind group and I mentor a lot of lawyers around the world, they're still afraid to do that. There are a lot of lawyers that, despite everything you and I are talking about, they're afraid to show their human side. Oh my God, what will someone think if they really find out what I'm like? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a whole nother topic for another conversation,
but
right?
But that's what people want, Mitch. They want authenticity. They want authenticity. They want you to be honest. They want you to provide value. That's how you become successful.
But you're looking at it through their eyes, and that's the way to look at it. In other words, you're exactly right. But a lot of professionals aren't on the social platforms because they're afraid of how they're going to come across. They're afraid of somebody mm-hmm. questioning how they put a sentence together. They're afraid of how they look or how they'll be perceived. And the reality is, the consumer is very forgiving. Americans are very forgiving, and they want to connect and build rapport with people. And so anyway, to answer your question, is what we did is I just went all in on the major platforms. I just added as much value as I could. I didn't hold back any of my secret sauce. I took the top probably 30 to 50 questions that were asked each month, and I shared detailed answers in blog posts and videos and podcasts and things like that. And I just put it all out there. Mm-hmm. And the response I got was just, you know, a big open-armed, you know, bear hug from the social media communities. Mm-hmm. This guy's here to help us out. And there was no ulterior motive. It's genuine and from the heart. It's not that complicated. It's just something that I think a lot of professionals aren't willing to put in the time to do.
Yeah.
So I did do that and enjoyed helping young entrepreneurs. A lot of people on social media are young entrepreneurs building online businesses. And mm-hmm. I really enjoy being around young millennials, Gen Y, Gen Z, and helping them if I can. So by doing that, you start building friendships and rapport. And from that comes a little bit of notoriety. You start getting asked to speak at different, you know, events. You start meeting people. And it's been fun. And for me, it's been a nice little diversion from the everyday practice of law. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. A friend of mine, very well-known speaker, David Merriman Scott, best-selling author, keynote speaker, brilliant marketer. I don't know if you've had David on your show, but you should. And mm-hmm. I can help make that happen.
That'd be great.
We were talking about this, and he's been in business a long time too. And what we both realized is social media, live streaming, the digital platforms, they make doing business fun again. Mm-hmm. Make building relationships fun again. And you and I met on social media. That's how we met. You know, so you meet really cool people, and it's fun, and it kind of breaks up the day. And so all of those reasons are why I'm doing it, and I've just really just poured my heart and soul into trying to help people, into building out the social platforms. And then I have a selfish motive, and my selfish motive is, and I really mean this, is I want to use social to show the community that trial lawyers are here to help protect their constitutional rights. We're here to help protect the little guy from getting bullied from the big guy. Mm-hmm. We're here to make sure that right prevails over wrong, that the good guys are the ones that get acknowledged. And this happens to be a profession where we're able to do that. Now, just like in any profession, you have people that are involved in the profession for all the wrong reasons. And one of the things about social is it's a very transparent medium. So mm-hmm. if you have somebody that's on social media and they're not practicing law or selling widgets for all the right reasons, it's going to show. People are going to find out. People are going, the bullshit meters are real
high.
Yeah,
they're going to see through that.
And that's why, you know, we have mutual friends who are police officers here in California that are using social media mm-hmm. To engage the community. And one reason I think it's so powerful is And I've seen the feedback. I've been on shows with these guys. I've watched the comments in their live streams. I've watched their snaps and Instagrams. The community is falling in love with these guys.
Sure.
And gals. They're seeing another side to these police officers where they're connecting with them and they're bonding with them. And if these guys and gals were doing social for the wrong reasons, it would show. It's going to come out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so that's been my little secret is I'm all in. And here's the thing. We're just getting started. When you look at technology, when you look at what's happening right now with live streaming and
scratching AI, the surface, my friends.
AI, MR, mixed reality, augmented reality, artificial intelligence. We're just scratching the surface. I'm speaking in 2 weeks up in Los Angeles at Summit.live. And one of the things I'll be talking about is over the next 10 years in digital, we're going to see 50 to 100 times the advancement of digital than we did over the last 50 years.
It's and amazing.
That just blows me away. And I'm just so excited to be a part of it. I just wish I was 30 years younger.
Now, can you? I hear you got a new book out. You're coming out with a new book, my friend. Can you give us some little snippets about it?
So I do have something coming out, and it's going to be probably mid 2017. Right now, the title is Overnight Success, and of course, there's no such thing as an overnight success. But it has to do with a mindset. It has to do with just snapping your fingers and making that decision, and everything else will fall into place. And I truly do believe, and I've watched it with my clients. I've represented hundreds and hundreds of clients, starting up companies, entrepreneurs, and I've noticed something with the successful ones. And they immediately, you can see it in their eyes, you know, they get that mindset, that switch is flicked, and it's game on. And they're the ones that just constantly engage, they constantly take action, and they make things happen. So that's what I mean by overnight success. And it's going to be focused on three different pillars of success. The first pillar has to do with developing and understanding and utilizing exemplary people skills. Mm-hmm. And we talk a little bit about people skills when it comes to negotiation. You've got to get that down if you want to be successful in today's world, especially online. Number two, you have to develop outstanding business skills. You have to treat what you do as a business, whether it's accounting, whether it's insurance, whether it's paperwork. There's a business aspect to being successful. And I see a lot of young millennials putting that off to the side, and then they're wondering why things haven't worked out. So that's the second pillar, is developing good business skills. And then the third pillar of success that we'll be talking about in the book has to do with developing and using and improving your digital skills. I truly believe either you or somebody in your office needs to have outstanding digital skills.
I agree.
Especially, you know, and so when you put these three things together, I think that's a great formula for success. You flip that switch, put those three pillars together, and before you know it, 20 years later, you'll be an overnight success.
That sounds amazing. Now, Mitch, how can people find you? I said they could probably Google your name, but your websites, your social media handles, how can they find you?
Well, thanks for asking. Probably the easiest way would be to just go to streaming.lawyer. That's a blog and website I have set up where I share a lot of my social media content, a lot of my live streaming content. There's a contact, you know, form there. If you want to connect with me on the more popular social media platforms, if you just go to mitch.social, that will take you to links of, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, things like that, and we can connect there. And my law firm website is jacksonandwilson.com, and that's where we take care of all the legal stuff. So, Patrick, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Well,
I really
Mitch,
enjoyed it.
We love having you on this show. Any final thoughts, words of wisdom you can give the listeners?
You know, I really deeply, deep down, I would just like people to think about what they say and do, because I think words matter. And one thing I tell my kids, I don't tell them this anymore because they're grown. My daughter's 22 and my son's 17, so I'm not dropping them off at school anymore. The years when I dropped them off at school, as they got out of the car, and if I didn't say this, they'd look at me because they knew it was coming, is I'd look at them and I'd say, "Hey, Garrett, remember to make today your masterpiece."
I like that.
You know, and I'd like everyone to make each and every day their masterpiece. It's not my line. It's the one and only John Wooden's line. And I think it's a beautiful line that we all need to strive to
great
to
basketball coach. UCLA, am I correct, Mitch? UCLA?
Absolutely, my friend. Right there next to Arizona, the two top teams in the Pac-12. But, you know, it is a good reminder that we need to live each and every day, do the best that we can to help others and to make the world a better place. And I think if everyone made an effort to do that, and I think we have to check ourselves each day to get that done, I think the world would be a better place.
Mitch Jackson, thank you so much, my friend. I know you're very busy. Thank you for coming on the show, and you are welcome back anytime.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.